This is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, January 30th, 2013. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Kyle Kellums. Support for KUAF comes from the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal, featuring architects and engineers in the February 4th edition, plus local business news in Northwest Arkansas. The current edition is available at 725-0394 or nwabusinessjournal.com, where you can also register for the daily business e-news.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, a preview of the 5th Annual Interfaith Harmony Day. This one-day event at St. Paul's Episcopal Church gives local residents the opportunity to learn about a variety of belief systems all in one place. Plus, our birdman, Joe Neal, returns with some sounds from the Red Cross Bills. Those stories and more.
But first, a major new employer will be coming to East Arkansas if the state legislature approves startup funding for the project. In a packed conference room yesterday at the state capitol, Governor Mike Beebe announced that a much-talked-about super project involves a proposed steel mill in Osceola.
It is a $1.1 billion investment, and it is 525 direct immediate jobs with an average salary of $75,000 apiece.
Osceola Mayor Dickie Kennemore says it will provide an incredible boost for the region and the state.
It is an event that's going to bring a struggling Delta County out of the doldrums, and it allows hardworking people like John referred to, these guys that come off of the farms, they'll be able to educate their kids, send their kids to college, feed their kids, and have a quality of life and a self-esteem that they've never had before. So it is such a great event. And I have to thank the governor for sticking with us. We talked to him early, and he said, I'm in for the duration.
About 2,000 temporary construction jobs would also be created as the mill is being constructed. It would produce steel for automobiles and products used by the energy industry.
A new bill in the Arkansas legislature would mirror bills in other states that require voters have official identification with them when they head to the polls. Some state residents may think that presenting an ID to vote is already mandatory, but District 5 State Senator Brian King, who filed the bill, says that's a common misconception.
You have poll workers asking for it, and people think it's the law already, but the reality is it's not. I mean, you can vote without a photo ID. They're required to ask, and, you know, if you polled most of our candidates, they would think it's law already, but the reality is it's not. And so this bill would just make it mandatory. We do have some provisions for, like, people in nursing homes and some instances like that.
Residents of long-term care facilities or nursing homes wouldn't have to provide photo ID to vote. However, those residents would be required to submit a letter from the administrator of the resident's facility that verifies they live there. King says although the law would require identification to vote, the law won't prohibit voting for those who are forgetful.
There are some restrictions that people could use, but it's pretty broad-based where most people will be able to vote with some type of photo identification. If they don't have a photo identification, if they forgot it for some reason, then they can still vote with a provisional ballot, and then during a period of time before the election commissioners count the provisional ballots, they can come in and prove their ID and verify who they are and their vote. So, and their vote will be counted.
The bill is set to be discussed tomorrow at the Senate Committee on State Agencies and Governmental Affairs.
February is Spay-Neuter Awareness Month, and the Fayetteville Animal Shelter is offering a free fix for pets on several dates throughout the month. Justine Lentz is Animal Services Director for the City of Fayetteville.
We're just trying to, you know, get the word out that this is the perfect time of year if you've been thinking about getting your pet spayed or neutered to go ahead and take that step before the weather gets warm and animals start getting out and getting together and kittens and puppies show up a few weeks later. So we are doing three different days and three different clinic dates where we're going to offer free spay and neuter services for residents of Fayetteville.
She says that getting your pet fixed will not take up the entire day.
It does depend, you know, on dog or cat. Spays do take longer than neuters, but usually you're looking at no more than 20 minutes even for the biggest dog, but probably a little bit less than that. With our clinics, usually you drop your pet off in the morning and pick them up the same afternoon.
The first of those clinics will be held Saturday, February 16th. For more information, you can visit the City of Fayetteville's website at accessfayetteville.org.
Enrollment at Arkansas Tech University's Ozark campus continues to grow. With the passing of the 11th day of classes yesterday, enrollment figures for the spring semester became official. The college had 1,826 students enrolled as of the census day. That number represents an enrollment increase of about 10.5% over enrollment in spring 2012, which was totaled at 1,651 students. Enrollment during the spring semester also represents a nearly 30% increase since the spring 2011 semester and a more than 50% increase over enrollment in spring of 2010. According to a news release by the college, all 4 years have been spring enrollment records for the campus.
Charter schools in Arkansas are ranked as 25th best in the nation, as reported by a new study released by the National Alliance for Public Charter Schools. Although the state's charter schools were listed 17th best in the nation last year, the report says the drop in ranking has more to do with substantive changes made in other states rather than any steps backward in Arkansas. Meanwhile, the overall score for Arkansas's charter schools actually increased, but the report suggested that areas for improvement include increasing schools' operational autonomy, increasing equitable access to capital funding and facilities, and enacting statutory guidelines for relationships between public charter schools and educational service providers.
Governor Mike Beebe yesterday announced that 7 central Arkansas counties have been declared a federal disaster area as a result of severe winter storms on December 25th and 26th. Those counties include Garland, Grant, Hot Spring, Lonoke, Perry, Pulaski, and Saline counties. The declaration makes the counties eligible for federal aid for emergency work and for cleaning up damaged facilities in the 7 counties.
Clouds early tonight, then gradual clearing. Lows will be in the mid to upper 20s throughout the region. Tomorrow, clouds come back. Highs will be near 51 in northwest Arkansas. Sunshine mostly in the Arkansas River Valley. Highs in the mid-50s. And for Thursday night, mostly clear, colder. Lows will be in the mid-teens in northwest Arkansas. Mid-20s tomorrow night for the Arkansas River Valley.
A world that works for all is the theme for the 5th annual Interfaith Harmony Day. The event gives local residents the opportunity to learn about various faiths, and this year a number of different belief systems will be represented, including Islam, Judaism, Christianity, Buddhism, Goddess, and Paganism. Reverend Diane Williams, co-chair of the event, says those invited to participate in Interfaith Harmony Day include people of all faiths and people of no faiths, as long as they are people of goodwill. Recently, Diane stopped by the Furman Garner Performance Studio along with Reverend John King, Hamid Nassim, and Diane Cook to discuss the event. During our conversation, we asked how event organizers are able to keep from preaching to the choir, as it were, and attract more than just people interested in learning about other faiths.
We are an organization who want to spread this. So this is like we are teaching how to teach, how to spread this thing. So it is, we want those people to come here, but themselves go out and start these kind of flower beds in their own ways, in their own communities, in their own small, areas of influence. So I think that it is not a bad thing that those people who come here are all the ones who would like to see these kind of things. Yet they do not know about other religions and faiths. Mm-hmm. I was involved in this thing since the beginning, and I belong to the Ahmadiyya Muslim community, and we have historically done this kind of interfaith events, but I didn't know that there is something called goddess, community. And so I think that I would go to their table and learn about them. You know, learning doesn't mean just learning the words about them or, what they represent as their faith or their dogma or whatever. To learn to interact with them and know practically that they are just like us. I think that's a lot of learning in it for each one of us. I'm going to invite this. There is a much bigger Shia community now in Fayetteville coming from, Iraq as well as Saudi Arabia. So I'm now contacting them to invite them to come over. And there are many misunderstandings between Sunnah or Sunni Muslims and Shia Muslims. If only they would just mingle with each other, they would know that what they have heard from people is not true. Mm-hmm. I belong to the Ahmadiyya community, as I said. There's so much misunderstanding about my community amongst the Sunnis and amongst the Shiites, but when I interact with them, they find out that it's all false things. So I think just within a Muslim community, this will heal a lot of, misunderstandings. Mm-hmm. Similarly, about Christian communities, there are so many denominations, and this is one forum where within 5 minutes or within 10 minutes, you can learn so much about different communities. And it's been learning experience for me for the last 5 years and beyond, because we also hold many interfaith events. So I think that it's just a good thing.
I'm curious because for those of us who grew up in the Ozarks, we were more exposed culturally and religiously to Christian faiths. So maybe you grew up Episcopalian, but you knew Methodists or Catholics or Presbyterians, Baptist, Church of Christ. We are an international town because of the college. We are growing, but I still think that predominantly people here are more likely to have been exposed more often to the Christian denominations. And I'm wondering if Hamid, you have seen more interest because there are more people like me who grew up surrounded by more Christian culture and services, that the Buddhists or Islam gets more attention from more of the visitors? Because it seems, to use lack of a better term, more exotic to those of us maybe who grew up in the Ozarks.
I think that is right. I think that is right. But, there are some limitations also. When you have such small time frame within which you have to interact. This time we have tried to remedy that a little bit, but people, because they want to be friendly, there may be still some questions that they may not be able to ask and so on. So it will remain a little bit exotic for a little bit longer because we have to have more of these events happening in communities like we have here. If we do it in this St. Paul's Episcopal Church, there should be this kind of events happening 52 weeks of the year. And then only we would actually be able to understand each other much better. And I think that is needed. There is a lot of room for expansion. I don't think that I can ever say that I understand Shia religion or Shia sect of Islam, despite the fact that I have interacted with many of them and I have read many books. So I think that this learning will go on, and I don't know, our Christian brothers can explain whether they still get these people who want to learn about their denominations. But I know that I think for Islam, there is a long way out there for us to, be able to communicate well with everybody else.
Dr. King, can Presbyterians still be exotic to Ozarkers?
Exotic? I don't think that word's been used in Presbyterianism all that much. But one of the spinoffs of this day has been that First United Presbyterian in Fayetteville has allied with the Jewish synagogue, with Rabbi Jacob Adler, and with a Muslim group that puts on panels several times a year now for those who are grounded in the Abrahamic faith. Now, in doing that, we know that doesn't include the Hindu, that doesn't include Buddha, that doesn't include non-Christian, non-anything else's. But in doing that, those groups, Presbyterian, Jewish, and Muslim, both, all three, have found, hey, there's things that we can share together, and you don't get on the defensive, and you're not also proselytizing. That's one thing that this day, it's more like a fair. Mm-hmm. I think we didn't want to call it a fair because it sounds kind of flimsy, and kind of non-important. But it is important, as you're right, if you look at the history of the Ozarks. When I came here 40 years ago and you talked about diversity, you weren't talking about very much diversity. There were five Chinese families in Springdale, and that was the diversity of Springdale, pretty much. We had small international community on campus. We had a historically small African-American population. But just ethnically, we weren't diverse. And religiously, we were pretty much totally Christian. And I can name one of the Hindu families that was here 40 years ago. I'm not sure about Islamic families 40 years ago. Maybe one or two. And it was the ones or twos. And in that case, you just don't get familiar. You know, they may be your next door neighbor, but you don't know what they're doing because they're not participating in your religious circle. Mm-hmm. And for the most part, it takes a long time to break down the feelings of, are you trying to convert us or are you trying to impose something on us, as opposed to, we want to be in a world that works for all, you know, where everyone, you know, that's the heart of the American experience, ostensibly for us.
Well, John has given us that title then. We Muslims take it that we are exotic still.
So you're hoping people that come will be able to learn something and maybe change their perspective. But what are you guys hoping to get out of it?
Oh, I think we get the most. I think we are blessed beyond. I haven't even done this before, but all I hear from past participants is it just comes alive and you will be blessed.
Yes, I want to speak to that because the first time that I was at this event, I didn't really know what it was going to be like. I had worked on the committee, but like she was saying, she hasn't been there yet, so you don't know. And I remember just looking around the room, and the room will fill up. It's a lot of people generally. But I looked around the room, and there was a sense of how cool this was, that we were all of us, learning and getting a little bit more understanding. And the Interfaith Harmony Day has always ended with some kind of music and participation. And I know that this is going to be great. This will be great.
Reverend Diane Williams, Hamid Nassim, Reverend John King, and Diane Cook are all participants in the 5th annual Interfaith Harmony Day. We recently spoke to them inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio at KUAF. Interfaith Harmony Day will take place from 1 until 5 Saturday afternoon at St. Paul's Episcopal Church in Fayetteville. The event is free and will include a variety of events, including music, poetry, food, children's activities, and discussions. More information available if you'd like to call 832-754-1791.
This is Ozarks at Large. Volcanoes erupt, but species erupt. An eruption is an incursion. An incursion is an invasion of another's territory. And our birdman Joe Neal is witness to an eruption of finches in Fayetteville, and he has this big lesson in evolutionary biology for us.
Welcome to the 1830s. Charles Darwin is aboard the HMS Beagle. He collects specimens of a previously unknown bird during a stop on the Galapagos Islands. Overall dull in color, they mainly differ in the size and shape of their bills. He's only in his 20s when he finds them. In the future, he will realize that striking differences in bills evolved over time as adaptations to different food sources. That sounds like a bunch of ancient history. Well, not exactly. There's something like Darwin's birds afoot as we speak in northwest Arkansas. This involves a dull-looking finch named Red Crossbill that may actually be different species. The bill is literally crossed like scissors gone haywire. Like Darwin's birds, they vary in shape and size. Crossbills go around in flocks. In size, they are midway between goldfinches and cardinals. They come south some winters when there is a shortage of food in their usual nesting areas. Picture big coniferous forests in the high Rockies, the Canadian Northwest. This is one of those winters. They've come to Arkansas. Here's a flock overhead. I recorded this at Fayetteville Country Club on a windy day in December 2012. Can you hear the flip-flip or chip-chip calls? Much of Fayetteville Country Club is open grass, but the fairways have stands of pine trees, tall and covered with cones. It's sort of like a coniferous forest in the Rockies. Crossbills feed on the seeds or nuts of many pine species, plus cones of spruces, Douglas fir, and hemlocks. The flock we just heard is headed for the pines. Just as Darwin found with his Galapagos birds, our crossbills share a common feature. Tips on the upper and lower parts of the bill decidedly cross. The birds perch on or near cones, insert the bill between the cone scales, and twist. The cross pries open pine scales so that seeds within the scales can be removed. I'm standing under some pines full of crossbills. In this next recording, see if you can hear cones being pried open and the birds climbing around parrot-like among the cones. It's a little snap, crackle, and pop. Size of the bill and the cross varies depending upon which type of cone the birds prefer. What, you ask? One bird can vary the size and shape of its bill? It's not that. Actually, as in the case of Darwin's birds, there may be as many as 9 or 10 potential species lumped under one name, red crossbill. Their bills are different, and so are their calls. Matt Young from Cornell University studies red crossbill vocalizations. He and others have documented 9 to 10 potential species. These vocalizations, referred to as call types, may reflect biologically distinct crossbills. Birds with different call types are associated with different types of cones and different bill sizes. As in Darwin's birds, our crossbills may have evolved from a common crossbill ancestor. New forms may have evolved to take advantage of new habitats and new food resources. Matt Young has analyzed my audio recordings of Fayetteville Country Club crossbills. He finds that most birds are ponderosa pine crossbills, termed type 2. He also found the western hemlock crossbill, termed type 3. During the nesting season, it occurs primarily in the big coniferous forest in coastal areas of the western United States. A big surprise was type 5, the lodgepole pine crossbill, from the western United States and Canada. We have lots of guest birds. Of course, out on the golf course, they all look alike to us as we watch with our sophisticated binoculars and listen from the fairway. They fly over, chattering away. We see red males and yellowish females, but that's about as far as it goes. Even if we don't know who is in a big flock, they do. Out on the golf course, lodgepole pine crossbills know ponderosa pine crossbills. Like those birds Darwin puzzled over long ago, this winter's crossbills in Arkansas have their secrets. After more study and more time, we may recognize the red crossbill, now termed type 2, is a separate species, as is the ponderosa pine crossbill and others, visiting us this winter. Folks at Fayetteville Country Club have welcomed birders on their links. Thanks so much for this generosity and for the careful long drives down the coniferous forest of wintering crossbills.
Joe Neal is co-author of Arkansas Birds, published by the University of Arkansas Press. His latest book, In the Province of Birds, a Western Arkansas Memoir, is published by Half Acre Press. An eruption of red crossbills has also been documented at Nine Stone Land Trust in southeastern Carroll County. You can find out more at our website, OzarksAtLarge.com.
It is Wednesday, January 30th? Already the 30th, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
With us is Becca Martin Brown. She is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Finally, he feels our pain.
I feel like I've adopted him now.
Yeah, he feels our pain. I feel better.
This is rare, but I agree. It doesn't feel like it should already be the 30th of January.
Hooray!
We are going to talk about two wildly different things.
I love that.
We're going to talk about something that happens today and will continue for a few weeks longer, an Eagle Cruise.
You love those.
Yeah. I do. They're hosted by Hobbs State Park. One happens at 3 o'clock today. They leave from Rocky Branch Marina. $10 for adults. You do need a reservation at 789-5000. Apparently, the cold, icky days are the best days to see eagles.
That's what I understand.
But the warm, wonderful days are the best days to cruise Beaver Lake. You can't lose either way.
Right.
And then there's the complete opposite of that. A reminder that on February 12th, World Wrestling Entertainment SmackDown is coming to the Verizon Arena in Little Rock, and The Rock will be there.
Oh, seriously?
I have never seen The Rock live.
He is.
I haven't either.
Now when he makes movies, he's Dwayne Johnson.
Yes.
I mean, he's gotten to that level of...
Yeah.
Yes, he ceases to be The Rock in movies.
Yes.
Sure.
But I've never seen him live, so I'm thinking. Tickets start at $17 and go all the way up to $97 at Ticketmaster.
Wow.
Well,
all right. Yeah,
I believe that if you buy the expensive tickets that are ringside, you get to take your chair away with you. At least you do at pay-per-views. But the ringside tickets for pay-per-views are like $400.
I hang into my chair because sometimes those guys hit you with the chair. So I'm just going to hang on to it.
I don't think that they hit the people in the audience.
No, okay. They don't hit. Although, I once had a ring barrier thrown into me by Rob Van Dam. I have a picture of the bruise.
That's awesome.
Where is that? It's in Verizon?
It's at Verizon, February 12th. It would make a great Valentine's present for your sweetheart.
With a chair. Okay.
All right. Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
So, you think you know it all?
Places sound kind of straightforward.
You think so, huh?
I think so.
Okay. Well, there's a lesson in that, too. Okay, winning Japanese politicians often wave one of the following. Do they wave a fish, a baby, or a single chopstick?
What?
I'm Michael Feldman. Join me this week for fun, laughs, and the quiz on the What Do You Know Radio Hour from PRI, Public Radio International.
What Do You Know? Saturday mornings at 10 here on KUAF 91.3 FM.
They're among the most familiar notes in American music. But George Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue was once, nearly nine decades ago, thoroughly new, thoroughly modern, and labeled an experiment. Rhapsody in Blue is a highlight on Saturday night's program for the Arkansas Philharmonic Orchestra. That performance will be at 7:30 Saturday night inside Arend Arts Center in Bentonville. This morning, I reached Stephen Bias, the conductor of the APO, who's on the road, not yet in Northwest Arkansas, and asked him about the selection of the Gershwin, along with other American staples from the last century, for Saturday night's concert. Stephen says one of the most iconic of all American compositions began when George Gershwin was approached by Paul Whiteman, one of the most popular band leaders of the 1920s.
And Whiteman asked Gershwin to write a piece for piano and jazz band, or piano and orchestra. And Gershwin declined because he said, there's really not enough time for me to do it. Well, a short time later, while Gershwin was playing billiards in a place in New York City, his brother Ira Gershwin, a librettist and writer with whom George Gershwin collaborated, Ira was reading the newspaper while George was playing billiards and noticed an article stating and announcing that Paul Whiteman had scheduled a concert called An Experiment in Modern Music. And it announced that George Gershwin was writing a new work for a piano and orchestra. And Gershwin called Whiteman the next day, and Whiteman said somebody else was ready to steal the idea and that they had to move on it. So Gershwin, at first reluctantly, but then willingly, dived into the composition of this piece that is so familiar to us today. And in 5 weeks, performed the work in New York with Paul Whiteman and his band, augmented by strings. And it came together so quickly at that opening performance. Gershwin hadn't even written down the piano part. In fact, really didn't commit the piano part to paper until after the first performance. And there are copies, or there is a copy of that original score with an indication to Paul Whiteman, the conductor of the band, to not bring the orchestra in until he received a nod from Gershwin, because he was essentially improvising some of the sections.
That premiere in February 1924 was in front of a packed house in New York City. Luminaries in the audience included John Philip Sousa and Sergei Rachmaninoff. A recorded version would sell more than a million copies by 1927, though some critics called the work formless and stale. Through the decades, though, its influence has grown. Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys and Michael Stipe of REM have testified to Rhapsody in Blue's importance in their musical development. For Saturday night's concert in Bentonville, the Arkansas Philharmonic is enlisting guest artist Yuni Han to play the piano. Stephen Bias says he met her, by chance, in Mississippi, where Stephen also serves as conductor of the Tupelo Symphony Orchestra.
When she first came to the United States from Korea, she stayed with a family, a host family, who lived in Jackson, Mississippi, the state capital, and created a long, lifelong bond with them. And she was in the U.S., and wanted to come and visit her brother, who was now working in Tupelo. So she called and said, could I play for you? And, well, you know, I, as a conductor, I get a lot of these requests. And I'm often skeptical about folks until I can get a chance to know who they are, doing some research. And immediately I found remarkable entries from many people around the world about what a wonderful pianist she was. I learned that Yuni had won perhaps as many, if not more, international competitions than any pianist with whom I've ever worked. And when she came to Tupelo, I was astonished from the first note that she played. And it seemed to be a serendipitous meeting, but I said to her then, we must work together. I'd like to engage you to play with the orchestra, not only in Mississippi, but in Arkansas.
This will not be Yuni Han's first appearance in this region. She was awarded both the first prize and audience prize at the Fulbright Concerto Competition in Fayetteville in 2011. A week after that, she won first prize Lewis A. Potter Award at the Washington International Competition for Piano at the John F. Kennedy Center for Performing Arts in Washington, D.C. She's also played Alice Tully Hall, Lincoln Center, Preston Bradley Hall in Chicago, as well as many concerts in Europe, South America, and Asia. This is a recording of her performing Beethoven's Piano Sonata No. 28 in Banff, Alberta, Canada. Thank you. Saturday night, however, will mark her initial public performance of Rhapsody in Blue. In addition to the Gershwin, Saturday night's APO concert will feature American classics written by Cole Porter, Jerome Kern, and Richard Rodgers.
There are some pieces that I think many people will not be familiar, and as always, I love to introduce them at the concert. I'll talk about the pieces, give a little background, and explain why George Gershwin, in addition to writing Rhapsody in Blue and so many other wonderful orchestral pieces, was such a phenomenal composer for the theater. And I've taken one of his works from the 20s, also one of Richard Rodgers' pieces from the 1920s, the collaboration with Lawrence Hart. And of course, no program of significance of musical theater, especially early musical theater in the United States, would be complete without Showboat of Jerome Kern. And the other two things from the 40s, I think I'll let people come to our concert and be surprised. I can assure you that the pieces will be exciting and interesting.
Stephen Bias is the conductor of the Arkansas Philharmonic Orchestra. The APO's concert, including Rhapsody in Blue, begins Saturday night at 7:30 at Arend Arts Center in Fayetteville. You can learn more at arkansasphilharmonic.org. I talked with Stephen earlier this morning while he was in Florida.
This is Ozarks at Large. Some high-caliber names in the literary world will be coming to Little Rock as part of the 2013 Arkansas Literary Festival. Authors taking part were recently announced, and KUAR's Michael Hiblin has more.
The festival will take place in April, with more than 80 authors taking part. Jay Jennings is a regular contributor to the New York Times Book Review and is the festival's volunteer chair.
We've got, as usual, a great lineup, and we're really excited about it. One of the bigger names who's coming is a name that'll be familiar to a lot of Arkansans, and that's Richard Ford, the novelist, Pulitzer Prize winner for his book Independence Day, and author of The Sports Writer, which other people may be familiar with. And the most recent novel is Canada. He's got long ties to Arkansas. His grandparents ran the, I believe it was the Marion Hotel downtown, so he spent summers here, even though he's most frequently associated with Mississippi, but really one of the great American contemporary novelists.
A full schedule will be announced in March, but you can find a list of authors taking part at arkansasliteraryfestival.org.
Another novelist I'm really excited about is Ben Fountain, who wrote a book that was a finalist for the National Book Award, a novel called Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk. And it's an Iraq war story, a satire, but a very serious book as well, that takes place, interestingly, during the halftime of a Dallas Cowboys game where a certain platoon of Iraq war veterans are being honored for their service. And it's really a beautifully written and fascinating and funny book. And there's the Cowboys' fictional owner in the novel is, might remind some people of Jerry Jones. So that'll be of interest as well.
Jennings says many authors have connections to Arkansas, while others will be here for the first time.
There's some 80 authors coming, and what I really love about the festival is that, you can really get up close and personal with the writers who they'll all be hanging around after their sessions to sign books, and there's always a Q&A session, during their presentations, and everything is free, first of all, which is great.
The Arkansas Literary Festival runs April 18th through the 21st. 2 weeks later, as part of a fundraising event for the festival, Pulitzer Prize winner Larry McMurtry, best known for writing Lonesome Dove, will appear with Diana Ossana. The pair have worked together on dozens of film scripts, including the Academy Award-winning Brokeback Mountain. That fundraiser will be May 2nd, with a free book reading the following day. In Little Rock, I'm Michael Hiblin.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me is Wayne Bell inside the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Is it true that you now have your list of your 10 favorite movies of 2012?
I do, and it's really fitting that it would come out about a month after everybody else's, but, you know, we're slow to get them here in Fayetteville.
Well, not everyone is a critic for the New York Times and gets to see them early either.
Yeah, and they haven't really accepted my bids to become one in Fayetteville. So,
well, I'm anxious to hear what your 10 are.
Okay.
Now, is there anything you haven't seen?
I have not seen Life of Pi,
which I just recently saw.
And you had problems with, but like the end?
Yeah. But I thought the end, I had not read the book.
Okay.
And my wife had, and she was wondering how this big resolution that takes place that kind of alters the movie was going to be done. She didn't think they could do it the same way in the movie that they did in the book, and they didn't. But for me, it made everything that came before that so much better.
Okay.
I really enjoyed it. Okay. And it was a beautiful movie.
Okay.
All right.
Well, given that I haven't seen that, I will say that my top three or four were easy and everything else is a little muddled.
Okay.
Where they fell. And then towards the very end, you know, it was like finding stuff to put there because unlike a lot of people, I wasn't a huge fan of like Les Mis or even, you know, something like that I liked over the summer, like The Dark Knight.
Right.
You know, it kind of faded after a while. So my number 10, which a lot of people won't even take seriously, would be The Best Exotic Marigold Hotel.
And that's one that you, if I recall, went to somewhat reluctantly.
And that's just it. I mean, anytime a movie surprises me and you can make a successful money-making film about 75-year-olds and it's handled well, I mean, that's an accomplishment. So my number 9 is The Perks of Being a Wallflower.
I have not seen that and I really want to see that.
Emma Watson still can't act. But everybody else is so good in it, and the screenplay is really charming and well done. And again, it's something that surprised me. Number 8, Beasts of the Southern Wild. That's my other half's favorite movie of the year.
And that is currently available on pay-per-view, on demand.
Up for Best Picture. And it's the story of a father and daughter who are living about 45 miles south on a private island of New Orleans. And they've kind of got their own community with their own rules and their own language. And it's about, you know, a relationship between father and child.
You know, every year there seems to be a movie that the people who've seen, when they try to explain it to people who haven't seen it, it's hard to explain. Tree of Life, the Terrence Malick a couple of years ago, was that way. This movie kind of seems that way for some people.
It is, but it's very, very approachable. And I'm the first to say the Tree of Life was not. Number 7 is West of Memphis.
The documentary
about the three men who were accused and convicted and spent 18 years in jail after the West Memphis murders that happened in the early 90s.
Right. Jesse Miskelly, Damien Eccles, and Jason Baldwin, I believe.
Right. And it's a really great movie, really entertaining, but presents the effort it took to get these men freed and come to some sort of resolution, which isn't really great, but it's better than...
Yes,
they still get to be free, but they had to, as
they
part of it...
They did plead guilty.
And they had to plead guilty under a portion of the law that said that they knew they were innocent, but right. it's worth watching.
And that, I believe, now is available...
Yeah, I believe that is available on, like, Netflix.
Right.
Number 6 is probably your number 1, which is Lincoln.
Yes.
I love Lincoln, and I thought it was really well done and made a movie that could have been textbooky seem really entertaining. And for Steven Spielberg, it was really restrained, which, you know, that's not his first thing he's known for. And great performances by, you know, Sally Field and Tommy Lee Jones and James Spader. And then, of course, Daniel Day-Lewis,
right.
You know, who's going to win another Oscar.
Well, and just down the line, people with 4 or 5 lines were familiar faces.
Yeah, Gloria Rubin and Walter Goggins. And, yeah.
There's the guy from Girls.
That's right. That's right. Adam Driver. So it's a great movie, and the fact that I have a Steven Spielberg movie on there is, you know,
it's
a testament.
Lot.
Yeah.
Okay,
I'm not the hugest fan.
We're up to the big 5 now.
Yep, number 5, Django Unchained.
Okay.
Did you see it?
I have to admit, I am wincing at the thought of as much violence as is on the screen. I know that it's, quote, cartoonish violence in the second half, but it's just keeping me away.
Yeah, and maybe that is going to happen for some. It is up for Best Picture, but, you know, it's it is handled in such a cartoony way that it's laughable, and it has problems. Most of these movies, other than my like top two or three, have serious, serious problems. This one has them in the third act, but the first two are so great, and Christoph Waltz is so good.
Again.
That it's worth watching.
Another trepidation I have about seeing this film is the last Quentin Tarantino movie that was out, Inglourious Basterds, was sort of a revenge alternative history fantasy.
The last? I mean, all Quentin Tarantino movies in some way.
Well, true. But, I mean, it was one where you know, it was a World War II based, and so alternate history, what if Hitler had been killed in this theater? And so this, I don't know, is this new enough territory that it's different?
It seems newer to me, but, you know, it also is a little bit more maybe approachable on that one. But, of course, like, internationally, I'm not sure if it would be.
Right.
But it's fun, and it has my favorite scene of the year, which involves Klan members trying to see out of their masks.
Played for comic effect?
For comic effect, very. Number four was Silver Linings Playbook, a film we both liked, but we both also said third act, problems.
Yeah. Well, you put it much higher than I would put it.
Oh, well, you know, I was thinking about that, too, and it was just like, God, the four performances are so good that it kind of elevates the rest of the material, sort of like Doubt a few years ago that I loved, but it was like the material wasn't handled the best, but the performances were so good.
The first two-thirds of the movie are so good.
Right.
And so I don't know how.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's got that scene with the Johnny Cash music in the back.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Which is great.
That's my favorite. Could be my favorite scene of the year.
Number two and number three are very close to me, and so I'll say they're pretty tied. I mean, maybe because they keep getting lumped together, but they're completely different movies. That's Zero Dark Thirty and Argo. Mm-hmm. Argo has problems. We talked about that before. But the script and everything is just so snappy and sharp, and it keeps you on your feet. And I mean, and the performances down the line are really great. And, you know, Bryan Cranston and, I mean, Alan Arkin, John Goodman. I mean, just really great performances. And, you know, and another great film by, you know, Ben Affleck out of, you know, nowhere. And Zero Dark Thirty is Catherine Bigelow, her take on the hunt for Osama bin Laden. And it's been getting a lot of heat because, you know, some people say it's pro-torture or she's not taking enough of a stance. But, you know, her position is, I'm just telling a story. It's up to you to come up with whether you think those methods were more, you know, appropriate or not. And it's amazing. My number one movie of the year is a surprise because nobody saw it. And it got one sad little Oscar nomination, though very deserving. And that's The Sessions.
Is that Nicole?
No. That's The Paperboy. Very different movie.
Okay.
The Sessions stars Helen Hunt.
That's right.
And John Hawkes. And I can't remember a movie that's made me sob like that, but in such a well-done way. It's the story of a 38-year-old man who has polio, and he, of course, for the most time lives in his chamber, and he seeks help from his priest, who's played by William H. Macy. And because he wants to have a sexual experience, he's never been able to do that. And so Helen Hunt portrays a sex therapist, and she does it from a very clinical perspective, and defines what the difference between a sex therapist and a prostitute is. Mm-hmm. And through that, you know, exploration and very unconventional storytelling, it's just a great, great performance. The fact that John Hawkes isn't nominated for an Oscar is bizarre, probably because nobody's seen it. And Helen Hunt is amazing. And, you know, any movie that can remind us of an actor, even like Lincoln did with Sally Field,
right,
that you kind of forget about, So, you know, all in all, a pretty good year. Like I said, my top three or four were really great, and then it kind of got a little muddled after there, but they're all good movies.
All right. I'm going to see the sessions very soon upon your recommendation.
Get on it.
I will. Thank you, Wayne.
Thank you.
John Kerry's move to the State Department leaves a Senate seat to be filled temporarily right now. Then, in a special election come June, Saxby Chambliss and Tom Harkin will leave two more for November 2014. Ray LaHood's departure opens another cabinet job at the Department of Transportation. And Sarah Palin exits Fox News. I'm Neil Conan. Political junkie Ken Rudin returns next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation at 1 o'clock this afternoon, immediately following Ozarks at Large, here on KUAF 91.3 FM.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Hazel Valley.
Where's that again?
Hazel Valley's in Washington County, and it was a community, still is a community, but it had a post office, oh, within the last 20 to 25 years, maybe even sooner than that. Don House would be able to fill us in on all that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's a Hazel Valley expert.
Oh.
Beautiful part of the world.
So he probably has lots of pictures from there?
I hope so,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. We have some business with tickets.
Yes. Yesterday I asked a question that would get correct answers into the Ceramic Cow for a chance to win two tickets to the Arkansas Philharmonic Orchestra we heard about earlier in the show.
Uh-huh.
It's Saturday night at 7:30 at Arendt Arts Center. I said yesterday was the anniversary date of the first time a poem had been published with the original author's name.
Yes.
And I said all you had to do was think about the Super Bowl teams,
right,
and you could come up with it. And the teams in the Super Bowl again Sunday are?
The Baltimore Ravens and the San Francisco 49ers.
So if you think of Baltimore Ravens.
All I could think of was
The Raven by Edgar Allan Poe. And that's what I was going for.
Okay, good.
I'm sure there was there's a poem somewhere out there about the 49s, whatever. But I was looking for the Raven. Taylor Hearn was one of those who correctly answered. Taylor Hearn.
Congratulations.
You have two tickets to the Arkansas Philharmonic Orchestra concert Saturday night. They'll be at Will Call. I'll send you an email to let you know.
All right. And a few more things. Just want to update some people on some stories that we've done. Last year in, I guess, September? Maybe October. I got to hang out on set with Gordon Family Tree. It's a movie that was filmed here locally. It was good fun. They let me spend the day with them, and that was very lovely of them. But I found out yesterday that they're planning to have the red carpet premiere at the Malcolm Razorback Theater in Fayetteville on May 22nd at 7. There'll be a private after party for all premier ticket holders at the UARC Bowl on Dixon, and they'll have more ticket information and details and all that good stuff will be coming soon.
I believe that's a Wednesday, the 22nd.
I have no idea. I have not looked that far.
Well, I think that's the case.
Okay.
I noticed that in deciding who gets to update people on stories, you got the fun one. You got the thumbs up. Monday, you had a story about schools closing because of illness. And that very day.
Right.
Actually, almost as that story was first airing.
I think as it was airing, I got the news that another school district was sick and they were going to have to shut down.
Lincoln Consolidated School District dismissed early. And because of widespread illness. And so school is resuming on Thursday. Is that what they're doing?
I think so. The 31st, okay. I believe.
Yes, that's tomorrow.
Yes, tomorrow.
Actually. So hopefully that's the last school district in our area that has to deal with
last
that.
Last I checked, they still weren't sure what it was, but they were thinking maybe it was norovirus again, just with how quickly the kids were getting sick and stuff. So we'll find out soon, I'm sure.
Yeah.
All right.
Wash your hands.
Yes,
often.
Wash your hands.
Yes.
Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
Thanks so much for listening. Tune in tomorrow at noon for an all-new edition, and happy Wednesday.